Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Now you may be thinking to yourself, hold up. Was she not listening to her during that interlude? Did she not hear the readings? And anyway, I came to hear a sermon on hope, not abandoning it. This sounds depressing. Maybe I'm in the wrong place. Maybe the church next door is talking about something a little more upbeat. Maybe no one will notice if I slip out. But don't worry. Although that quote may be the inscription over the gates of hell from Dante's Inferno, I don't intend to recreate that here. There are reasons to suggest that abandoning hope might not be the beginning of the end, but the beginning of a new way. Let me explain. Hope is a topic with more dimensions than it might at first appear. This is the season of hope. As I noted at the beginning of the service, as we anticipate a number of holidays and good tidings and light this month, we find it is filled with messages of hope. Miracles of light can happen. The light of the world is on its way. Joy is almost here, just waiting to be born. On the one hand, as Reverend Scott Taylor writes in an article on hope, these soothing messages come to us as a gift. During dark days, we all get tired. The fruits of our efforts can be hard to see. We feel alone. The promise that things will change offers us relief. We are released from the burden of believing that it is all up to me or that it must all be solved now. And this kind of hope is a message with a lot to be said for it. There's a lot to be said for lifting our eyes to the distant hills when around our feet we see nothing but muck. There's a lot to be said for a little relief from the belief that it's all up to us, the pressure to make things better, a little relief from the idea that we have to do it all. But this kind of future-looking hope can limit us, can be a double-edged sword. The idea that it will all work out in the end through someone or something else who will fix it can lull us into complacency today. When we tell each other everything will be fine, it can be comforting, yes, but is it empowering? And the idea that there is some future in which everything will finally be the way we want can set us up for disappointment if or when that promise does not arrive. When, after repeated requests, our partner does the same upsetting thing again and we wonder if they will ever be what we thought we wanted. When, in spite of all our care and support, our friend's condition just isn't improving and their outlook isn't either. Or even just looking for signs that things in our world are getting better and not seeing it and wondering if we ever will. The tension created by holding on to hope on the one hand and seeing things not change or get worse on the other leaves us vulnerable to despair or simply resignation. We don't see impacts, our efforts feel ineffective, we lose steam, we want to give up. As Clark Mallett writes, that's part of the problem with hope. It encourages us to think that if we do certain things, take certain steps, achieve certain milestones, we will necessarily get the outcomes we want. It assumes we have the solutions and can control the future. But that's not how the universe works, he continues. Nothing we can do will give us complete control. If history has taught us anything, it should have taught us that. Hoping or despairing about what we can't control only distracts us from what we can, our actions in the present, right now. In her book, Hope in the Dark, Rebecca Solnit echoes this message that we are the ones. Things change, she writes, not by magic, but by the incremental effect of countless acts of courage, love, and commitment, the small drops that wear away stones and carve new landscapes. Even as she echoes this message that we are the ones, she also notes that we don't set the pace. Sometimes our efforts impact things slowly. Sometimes, she writes, in sudden torrents, but we can't predict the speed. And so despair is often premature. It's a form of impatience. She shares a favorite comment about political change from Zhou Enlai, the premier of the People's Republic of China under Chairman Mao. Asked in the early 1970s about his opinion of the French Revolution, Zhao reportedly answered, "Too soon to tell." Some say he was talking about the revolutions of 1968, 4 years later, not 1789, 300 years later, but even then, it provides a generous and expansive perspective. Because we cannot always immediately see the impact of our good-hearted actions. We cannot always see the impact of our actions at all. Today, I want to share with you a couple of examples of hope that are expansive in their timing, whose outcomes were not predictable or even visible in the moment. Examples that reflect how sometimes there is more at work in us and around us than we can see or ever know, but that affirms doing what we can in the present anyway. Like this one, a story a friend of mine shared with me last week. In the 1600s, Tsetsujin, a devotee of Zen in Japan, decided to publish the sutras, the scriptures of his tradition, which at that time were available only in Chinese. The books were to be printed with wood blocks in an edition of 7,000 copies, a tremendous undertaking at that time. Tsetsujin began by traveling and collecting donations for his purpose. A few sympathizers would give him 100 pieces of gold, but most of the time he received only small coins. He thanked each donor with equal gratitude. And after 10 years, Tsetsujin had enough money to begin his task. It happened at that time that the Yuji River overflowed. Famine followed. Tsetsujin took the funds he had collected for the books and spent them to save others from starvation. Then he began again his work of collecting. Several years afterward, an epidemic spread across the country. Tsetsujin again gave away what he had collected to help his people. And for a third time, he started his work, and after 20 years, his wish was finally fulfilled. And the printing blocks which produced the first edition of sutras can be seen today in the Obaku Monastery in Kyoto. The Japanese tell their children that Tsetsujin made three sets of sutras, and that the first two invisible sets surpass even the last. We forget sometimes that refusing to get discouraged, that staying flexible to events, and simply doing the good we can in the moment, we may do more along the way than we ever imagined. And other times, we forget we can make any impact at all. We feel simply overwhelmed by the size of the problems we see. We feel too small. But take the following story, also from Rebecca Solnit's book. Women's Strike for Peace was the first great anti-nuclear movement in the United States that contributed to a major victory, the end in 1963 of above-ground nuclear testing, and so the end of the radioactive fallout that was showing up in mother's milk and baby teeth. Positioning themselves as housewives and using humor as their weapon, the women of this activist group told of how foolish and futile they felt standing in the rain one morning, protesting at the Kennedy White House. And then, years later, one of them happened to hear pediatrician Dr. Benjamin Spock, who had become one of the most high-profile activists on the issue, say that a turning point for him was spotting a small group of women standing in the rain, protesting at the White House one morning. If they were so passionately committed, he thought, he should give the issue some more consideration himself. Doing what we can in the present, not because we're certain it's going to make a difference, but simply because it's what we can do. And whether or not any of our actions have a major impact out there, they may just have an impact in here. Because as Czech statesman Václav Havel writes, hope is a state of mind, not of the world. It is a dimension of the soul, not dependent on some particular observation of the world or estimate of a situation. Hope is an orientation of the spirit, an orientation of the heart. As one of our connection group facilitators said the other day, hope is a spark. Where we take it from there is up to us. And when we allow that spark to change our frame of mind, when we become a light and act on that, we may just spark the light in those around us. When I participated in the UUNU class last month, I had the opportunity to see again what this place looks like through the eyes of a newcomer. Because in that class, we touch on all the things we do. It's an overview of everything. Our caring circle, this congregation's presence to those in our midst having a hard time. Our sharing locker, and this congregation's presence to those outside our community who are having a hard time. The relationships we're building with our Muslim neighbors. Our commitment to being a green sanctuary. All the groundwork being laid for the hanging of a Black Lives Matter banner. It made me hopeful. And as I reflected on it more, I realized that was just the beginning. Because then there's all the other social justice and community service we do. And there is the deep, heartfelt commitment of your board and the leaders of your committees. There's the growing number of you committing to connection groups and other ways of growing your spirit. There's the fact that this year, over half of you have increased your pledge by an average of 35%. I see all that you are doing and how much you care, and I realize it is only in bits and pieces that I usually see it, but when it's all together, it just about blows me away because we're doing it. We are being who we say we are, and that is beautiful. One of our new members said at the end of the class, "I like the way you all are looking outward. You're not just thinking about what's going on in here, you're also thinking about what's going on out there, and you're taking action." And so we are, each of us in our own way, as we participate in this place, even if all you can do sometimes is just show up here on Sunday mornings. We are being hope. Paraphrasing Kent Nerburn, we may not be saints or heroes. Our lives may be lived in the quiet corners of the ordinary. We may build just tiny hearth fires, but to the person lost in the darkness, our tiny flame may be the road to safety. It is not given us to know who is lost, or even if it's seen, we can only know that against even the smallest of lights, darkness cannot stand. It is simply an issue of the presence of light. So, may we abandon the kind of hope that leaves us complacent. May we abandon the kind of hope that leads to resignation when it is not fulfilled. And let us embrace the kind of hope that starts with us, that looks for sparks, that has breath and a beating heart, that knows how to holler when it is called for, that knows how to sing when there seems little cause. Let us embrace the hope that raises us from the dead, not someday, but this day, every day, again and again and again.